All right, Andrew Kenyon, we may as well introduce ourselves. So Joseph Corr here from Perform Sports Media, amongst other outlets, and I'm joined by...
Andrew Kenyon, no official sporting qualifications other than being a big fan.
For many, many years. Big show today. Let's jump in. We've got Will Weaver, Gorgian, signings, reconciliation plans, Magnay, preseason games to talk about, ownership changes, a whole bunch of stuff. Let's start at the top. Let's go with the player signings first. That was your idea, Andrew. Cam Oliver, when he re-signed for 2 years, your first thought?
My first thought was, this is massive news. Amazing stuff for the Taipans. I didn't expect him to come back. It had been so long. I thought, nah, they're going to have to move on because he's obviously gotten better deals elsewhere. Whatever cash they had to throw his way, totally worth it. Not just for Taipans, but for the league. This guy's like league MVP entertainment value for sure, if not league MVP, just for talent. It's fantastic. I'm pumped. Back.
I mean, I didn't have to think long and hard to remember this guy. Like, he was so memorable. The dunks, the plays, his physique, his body. He's only 24, 25.
Yep.
NBL second teamer and could have made it over Nick Kay, if we're being really honest. Nick Kay's first half of the year was pretty modest and was on that line. But look at these things, like 18 points a game, 10 rebounds, good percentages, second in double-doubles behind Sean Long, great PER. You know, and would perform really well in the finals too.
Yeah,
it's not like he had a good season. Like, he pushed the Wildcats. I thought he did really well.
He gave Nick Kay yips during the finals. Have too many I's and A's there. He got better as the season went on. I thought, you know, he started off and he was a dunking machine, and then by the end of the season, if you stepped off him from three, he was knocking it down. Constant improvement, but how much of that that quality of play was facilitated by his running mate,
Machado. Well, I wrote about this for the very hot on the playground. It's all the talk. The NBL Pocket Podcast Patreon, I put up an article there about it just today. This is right. Scott Machado dished out what? League best, 234 assists, was by far and away the best guy to get a guy's score. Now, whether he was the best play setter for the team and, you know, timing and all that sort of thing is debatable, but his ability to find a guy for a shot was, or a dunk or whatever, was league best.
Yep.
A lot of those went to Cam Oliver for sure. And one of the other thing I want to get at it with this is, look at the big guys that have left. Like, they talk about the cull of this offseason of big guys, and I'll go through a bit of a list with you, Andrew.
Sure.
Andrew Bogut, Nick Kay, Josh Boone, Will Magnay. Matt Hodgson was almost gone but came back. Sean Long is gone. Miles Plumlee, Brandon Ashley, and Jayshon Tate all look unlikely, but are possible. But those others are definitely gone. Cam Oliver steps up. Like, there's NBL first and second teams in that list. He just becomes far and away the best big in the NBL, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's a donut league. There's nothing in the middle. It's just these guys.
Isaac Humphries and Mooney are the two guys we're like, okay, they've come in, but are you sort of like, oh, no, they'll definitely handle Cam Oliver when they play him? I think the opposite.
No, I don't see that at all.
Humphries, I think Oliver will run through and jump over. Mooney, I haven't seen enough. I'm willing to give him a question mark, but geez, yeah.
He's certainly not going to match you in just raw athleticism.
No.
Jeez. So I think this is how they got him back. They said, Cam, look at your level of competition. Imagine what your stat line is going to be and your NBA potential coming out of this year.
Well, I agree with that. 2 years,
because it's a two-year deal, right?
It's a two-year deal. Amazing. 2 years. What does this say? What does this signing of 2 years and also him returning, what does it say about the state of sort of sports players, agents, where they're signing, security versus whatever? This looked to me as a like, no, we'll take care of you in the Southern Hemisphere with a two-year deal, and then, you know, the Northern Hemisphere will happen if it does. It'd obviously have NBA and Euro outs.
Yeah, yeah.
But it looks like players are leaning towards security at a time like this, which is, you would have think, pretty, you could have guessed it.
Yep. One of the things I've been thinking about as well is probably one of the lures has traditionally been playing in front of a good crowd. And maybe you'd say, oh, I want to go to the US or Europe to play in front of one of those crazy, crazy lunatic crowds they have over there. All of that has just been equalized now. Like, you're basically not playing in front of people. So that is a non-factor anymore. I don't wonder if that has any bearing in decision-making. I don't know. Just a theory, you know. Like,
that's a thought.
It's all gone away.
I think money speaks pretty loud in these situations, and maybe they've taken a hit with money over there. I think is my other thought.
Yeah, that's true.
They'd have to, but then they would have taken a hit here anyway. Any negatives with Cam Oliver?
You'd be nitpicking if you said yes, right? I mean, yeah, you could make an argument of, you know, maybe you say team balance or slows the development of Aussies. I don't care. Nah, get him in there. It's fantastic.
The only slight, and again, as you say, you'd be nitpicking with negatives, and I am, can be slightly erratic, does get distracted. Like when he does a big dunk, sometimes his opponent will go down the other end and lay it up, which I actually kind of like from an entertainment value. Like, to me, the dunk meant more than the 2 points.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy going to the other end, it's worth more than that. Plus, he can get it when he wants. But that's one thing. I will say that on occasion, when teams sag off, he can be a little confident, just shooting it up every time. A one of eight night against Melbourne United in October and an 0-7 from the outside against the Breakers in January. Again, minor nitpicking stuff, but this
happens
is great.
Happens to the best of us. We all have an off night, right?
What's interesting as well, we're talking about agents and signing. This is now player, pick a number that's quite high, of Lighthouse Sports Management that's returned or come to the NBL. So Cam Oliver is one, I believe. Xavier Cooks, Chris Golding, Keanu Pinder, Isaac Humphries, Mitch McCarron, Matt Hodgson, all represented by Lighthouse Sports, all come back to the NBL. So it's good that a big agency like that seems pretty keen on getting guys to the NBL and sees it being fruitful.
Yeah, yeah, it's fantastic. Well done, Lighthouse.
Yeah, and what do you think this says about Scott Machado? The only thing that shocked me about this signing was I thought they were going to announce Scott Machado first. I thought they were going to make sure they got that first. Does it suggest to you that Machado's coming back? To me, it does.
To me, it does. In terms of the timing, maybe that's how ideally they would like to play it, but I think there's so much uncertainty. You just lock in what you've got. You know, you get a signature on a piece of paper and you run with it. Machado to come back.
It was talk that he'd signed months ago on a 2 or 3 year deal in the biggest in Cairns history. So he's got that on the table, whether he's just playing hardball. Hope he comes back.
Me too.
Let's move on to other signings. Orlando Johnson signs with Brisbane. Yep, Liam Saint-Marie had an article on NBL.com. What was your reaction? What do you think?
It's all happening in Queensland, isn't it? That's where the action is.
That's right.
I don't know anything about him. I watched the highlights that the NBL kindly provided. He looks like really the highlights showed him as being super athletic and dunking on everybody, but what highlights package doesn't show that. The question is, does he still have that athleticism? Because some of the footage looked a bit old.
He's 31. 31, which is a fine age. There's not an issue with that. I think John Robson was 31 last season. But when you're a wing, slasher, scorer,
you're relying on that ability it looked like he particularly relies on that ability to fly by a guy and elevate. Does he still have it?
We'll see. That was the crux of what Liam Saint-Marie was saying in his article. I think the other thing as well is when you go on to buy a new car, you look more at the person selling it than the car itself, or at least equally. I look at Brisbane, and I saw their preseason games, which we'll talk about, and I look at the state of Brisbane and their team, and they've always sort of, since coming back, operated kind of on the line of, you know, a little bit, you know, shortchanged, a little bit, not the hugest bankroll. And I just look at this as they've gone, you know what? He's come a bit cheaper. Let's take a risk. That's just to me what looking at them and their situation. So hopefully it goes well for them.
Yeah, they certainly didn't excite me. Not that I watched the two games. I'm glad I didn't.
We'll talk about that. Boy,
we'll get onto that.
You were saying, Andrew?
I was going to say they're basically the new players signed up. I just wanted to draw attention to the point you made before we start click record about whether it's worth scouting these players much before the league starts, or whether the thrill is in just seeing them show up on day one and seeing if they're good or whether they're rubbish. I thought you had a nice way of putting it.
Oh, okay. I'll happily share it. So this is a piece of advice I got from an old man at a bus stop. So prepare yourselves. He basically said, and it's an extension of that, where he said, if you're dating a girl or guy, I think both principle works both ways, always go to a date at the beach so you can kind of see what's going on. And I think with the imports in the NBL, it's very much like you're not doing that. It's winter. You're coming home in winter coats. You don't know what's going to happen. You're just open the bow and you hope it's a nice present inside. And I think that's the best way to approach NBL imports. Wait till they're here. You can't scout these guys unless you're on the ground in Europe or the USA, wherever they've come from.
Yep.
And even then, even if you speak to people there, most of them are just like, oh yeah, he's great. You never get any, you never get anything honest. So it's fun to just see day one and go, all right, I believe most import contracts kind of have a 7-day kind of cooling off period.
Cooling off period. You're rubbish. Get out of here.
And then that's what I know. I actually think they need to celebrate that, don't you? Where it's like, all right, an import's coming. We don't know. Let's all find out together. I think that should be more of a rhetoric of the league.
Look, that was one of the great things of the pre-internet era, is that you literally got guys who were advertised as being 6'9", you know, could jump over a car. They'd get off the plane and, in fact, they were 6'1", overweight, struggling to get off the ground. Yeah, and it's like that was the fun. It was like you're going to the casino. You're going to the basketball player casino. You're rolling the dice out. You think you're going to get pair of sevens or whatever a good dice roll is in that kind of game, and instead you get snake eyes.
Come on, craps. Yeah, I think that is a good point, and I think they should embrace it more. Doing that sort of thing. I don't know if we talked about it in the last one, but Ben Moore is signed with South East Melbourne. Flowing on from this conversation.
Ah, yes.
Power forward, kind of long, kind of rangy. Looks like he's got a bit around the hoop. Looks like a little bit more of a grounded player, but again, we shall see come day one.
Yep.
You wanted to talk about what's going on with Melbourne United. Take the floor, Andrew.
Yeah, look, a bit of a question. If I've done my maths right, they're the only ones that haven't signed an import yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe so.
Do they know something we don't? And I sort of wondered whether maybe it was a COVID impact. You know, they got locked down for a period of time. What can you do? But it hasn't seemed to have stopped South East Melbourne. So that sort of rules out the Melbourne issue. So what's going on? Are they cheaping out this year, or do they really believe that by waiting, they can get some superstar, or have they got something up their sleeve? It's just really intriguing that Melbourne, usually one of the big splash teams, you know, look at last year, they had the two big signings, didn't really play out.
Early on too.
Have they gone gun shy from what happened there?
The only insight I can offer is, And if you want to get a better sense of this, people go to my Twitter account, NBL Pocket Pod. There were a few Australian teams looking at Chris McCulloch, who plays in Europe, I believe, in Lithuania. And you can see the whole thread there where some people think he's good, some people think he's not so good. But I don't know. I think Melbourne probably looking at him. It would be unlikely that it was Southeast Melbourne looking at him, because they just signed Ben Moore at that time. Yeah. Most teams have got – so it was either Brisbane, United – Cairns at that point hadn't signed Oliver. It seems unlikely it's them now. So if they were looking at him, it looks like, again, they're looking to maybe get Supremo talent on a budget. I don't know. This is totally rumor, but I agree with you. It's very strange they haven't done anything. Them, along with Perth, are big clubs, and Perth have seemingly just gone, yeah, we're ready. If Cotton gets his citizenship, we'll reassess that. But they're in. Other teams have got theirs. But yeah, Melbourne United, I don't know.
Yeah, look, it's interesting to see. I hope they haven't written the season off. I hope they're still competing.
Yeah, I mean, they've been through hell with what's COVID and everything, but I'm sure they'll find a way through. What do you want to go to next? Do you want to go to Brian Gorge and to the Boomers, or Will Weaver to Houston?
Let's do Will Weaver. That won't take long.
Let's do Will Weaver.
Will Weaver.
I've just got one note here. Good for him. Houston is an assistant coach. It was a job he wanted. The NBA was high on his agenda. It was before he came to the Kings, and he's kind of there. It's great.
Yep. Strikes me as a guy who had a clear checklist of achievements, you know, really career focused. What do I need to do to get to this level? And he did the G League tick. He's done the head coach of a professional league check. What's the next step? Well, he tried to jump straight to the head coach, didn't work out, but ever the pragmatist, he has decided that assistant coach in the NBA is the next best thing. And, you know, fair play to him. I would not knock it back if that was offered to me. I think it's a step up from the NBL head coaching gig.
Do you though? In what sense do you think it's a step up?
Oh, in terms of that, I think over that longer term career arc,
yeah,
I think it's a smart move. You know, he may be, yeah, obviously it doesn't come with quite the same, you know, cachet as perhaps an NBL
power head coach. Or influence, yeah.
But I think, look, he'll do his backroom deals. He is a mover and a shaker behind the scenes, is my impression of him. I don't know him. That's just what I feel from him. And not in a bad way, but I think he'll get to know the organization. He'll work his social magic.
Social magic. I like that. That almost sounds like a team name, you know? I'm trying to think of a place. The Darwin Social Magic.
Watch out. They're dominating the
or website. An app. Or an app. Social magic. You know, you've got, I don't know what it'll do, but something, no doubt. MO15 plus. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's this interesting thing where you've got head coach versus assistant, NBA connection of any kind or G League connection and professionally. A lot of people have been thrown around like, oh, this is a big stamp for the NBL as a real incubator of talent, both on the floor and now coaching. I don't entirely see it that way. And I don't know if you agree with me on this. I mean, I look at, because the other hiring we were going to talk about, or coaching hiring, was former Kings coach, another one, Damian Cotter, who's been given the assistant coach of the Bulls.
Yep.
He was a head coach with the Bulls in 2015, I want to say. So 5 years ago.
You mean of the Kings, sorry, not the Bulls.
What did I say?
The Bulls. You meant the Kings.
He was a head coach with the Kings going on to the Chicago Bulls as assistant coach. It was 5 years ago since he was with the NBL or with the Kings. You know, and ever since then, those last 5 years, he's been in the G League. So are the Bulls hiring a former NBL coach, or are they hiring a guy out of the G League? Same with Will Weaver. Will Weaver was 1 year with the Kings. Most of his career, well, the other half of his career has been in the G League. So is it a rubber stamp for the NBL, or is it a rubber stamp for the G League as an incubator? And I would tend to say it's that G League connection that kind of got both of them the gig.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. And I think you could only have to look at who else is coaching in the NBL. I don't think Will Weaver was the best coach in the NBL last year. He was very good. But why is the NBA not knocking on the door of any number of other coaches here in Australia?
Gleason, because, Joe Wright, Beveridge, so forth.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've got more runs on the board than Weaver. They've achieved more, and yet they're not getting a look in. So either Will Weaver has excellent management that is getting him in these open doors, or there's that G League connection.
Yeah, a stamp of approval for the NBL would be if a coach like Trevor Gleason got hired, or Joey Wright. Guys have been in the NBL a long time as a head coach.
Yeah.
Because then that kind of proves that the NBA or alike are actually watching the games. I don't think I don't think the NBA or the Houston Rockets watched the NBL finals or semifinals. I don't think they have, or if they did, they didn't watch it with the same intensity that they, or the same, put the same value on it that they did with their chats with Weaver. I just don't think you draw the same conclusion if you did that.
Yep.
Can you imagine? What do you think will happen with the Kings? They're now in a vacuum.
Yeah, I mean, I can think of two obvious candidates. I think it's not that I'm a genius. I think everybody in the country has thought of these two. Rob Beveridge and Adam Ford.
Yeah, I think it's exclusive of those two.
I think you're safe hands with either of them, but I probably would, if I was the Kings, I would probably give it to Adam Ford. I think Beveridge's time, I'm starting to wonder if his time has passed him by a little bit. His time in the league, anyway. He just seems to be missing out on more gigs than he's getting. I don't know if that's my perception or reality, but it just feels like, you know, he didn't get the Boomers job. Is the Beveridge era finished? And I think maybe Adam Ford, we need some young talent coming through as well. I think it'd be good to see that promotion.
I think with Adam Ford as well, I mean, if they were going to hire Beveridge, they would have done it over Will Weaver. You know what I mean? That it's not like, can you imagine now? It's again going back to sort of the comparisons we made at the start of the show. It's like being at the bar and talking to one girl or boy the whole time, and then all of a sudden late in the night, just as the lights are going to come up, you change focus to someone else. They're not keen. It's a desperate act. I think Adam Ford, it's a chance to, you know, start afresh. And the Kings seem to really value kind of coaches who are younger, player savvy, you know, and Adam Ford seems to be that guy. Whereas Rob Beveridge, I think, is more of a coach who's, this is my impression of him anyway, X's and O's, real coach. Like, I have a structure for you. I have an idea for you. We're going to do this. Whereas Adam Ford and those, they seem to be more of a
people manager,
postmodern type coach in their behavior, in their sort of the way they do things, more, you know, friendlier, or I don't know how, I don't think I'm articulating it very well, but they just seem to be that more throw your arm around people,
yeah,
and incubate young talent more so than Beveridge. I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's the way to see it.
Yeah, he left the Wildcats with a really good reputation. I think he was really well liked here. Now he's done a further apprenticeship. I mean, how many years do you have to work as an assistant before you're ready?
How old do you think Adam Ford would be? He'd be under 40, wouldn't he, or just over?
I think so. Yeah, I'd say he's...
And he's a young-looking guy. He's got the tattoo here and the beard and that. Like, he fits... If you're going to replace Will Weaver, you'd replace him with Adam Ford. You know, they just seem to be kind of the same guy in a different sort of style.
Yeah, maybe that assists the continuity. You know, he's worked under Will Weaver for the past year, so he knows what they're all about.
Exactly. And then also a bear economy. Like, it's... You go out and get Beveridge, you're starting afresh. I don't know what money he'd command. I'd assume it'd be more than Adam Ford. You know, he's got a rep pedigree. So in a bear economy, in a season that's looking a little bit dicey, do you just go, yeah, whatever?
Yeah.
I think that'll... what I also want to sort of wrap the Kings on the nose about is, why not just come straight out and announce Adam Ford? You know, they came out and they said, Will Weaver's gone to the NBA. The club will not be making any further comment. It's just like, just have that forward. Like, you know what you're going to do. Just have the chance to really celebrate him and go for it.
Oh,
or make that higher.
This is Sydney, you know. They've got corporate management. They need to run it through the senior management. Then they need to run it through the board. You know, they can't make a
Brian's
decision.
Lawyers.
Can't make
true.
A rash decision here.
Last thing on this. Yep. No Weaver. No Tate. Presumably, pardon me. I'm presuming, let's take that off. No Bogut. Uh-huh. No Lish. Is this team... as best as it exists in the NBL in a rebuild?
Sorry, the question again. You're saying are they
as best as it exists in the NBL, are they in a rebuild? Because you're not really rebuilding the NBL.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
sorry. This team has had it's had a gut punch.
Yeah. I think, they were built to win. They were win now last year, even the year before that. They had an aging roster. So, yeah, I think this is a rebuild. They need to blood some young talent, but I don't think it's a rebuild in the sense that we're going to go, 5-25 and, but yeah, this is going to be a struggle for them.
Mm. You look at it and their two best are Casper Ware, who's still a walking 14 some wins in the NBL.
Yeah.
You would think. And then Xavier Cooks, boy, he's got to be good.
He's got to come
on. He's got to be NBL second team type good. And,
if they're still leaning on Daniel Kickett to give him big points and score,
Cooks has to be a scorer.
Yeah,
and you're right. If they're looking at Kickett to be, again, a top scorer, is that all from the Kings? I think, and Weaver and that.
Yeah, just the one other thing, just quickly on Damian Cotto. Into the NBA. I haven't seen him for a number of years. I thought he was pretty good in the NBL, but that was that weird period of the Sydney Kings because he got replaced. He got sacked, if I remember correctly, and replaced with Joe Connolly. Do you remember Joe Connolly?
Oh, vaguely.
He was like this, one of these sort of high energy, almost kind of crazy wacko guys. He'd carry his little towel around during timeout.
I remember the towel.
Yeah. And he was just a complete, like, almost like a loose cannon was always my impression of him. And he replaced Damian Cotto, but now where's Joe Connolly? And Damian Cotto's in the NBA, so
unbelievable.
It's just a funny way, funny sport sometimes.
We talked about how scouting players coming from Europe to the NBL is impossible. It's almost just as impossible to be a coach. Like, what is the career progression and career ladder to progress as a coach? It has no rhyme. It has no reason. Just ask Rob Beveridge. It's supposed to be such a tough gig.
Yeah.
Speaking of coaches and teams, let's go to one of the bigger teams in the country, the Boomers. Hi, Brian Gorgian. Your initial reaction?
Not one of surprise. It was a sensible decision, I thought. A safe pair of hands, and probably the best available. That opens up a whole other can of worms of questions. Brian Gorgian is getting on near 70 years old. I think he's 67.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the young coaches and how do they advance? A guy that's been out of the country for a decade.
Yeah, more.
He swings back in. He's got a league coaching gig all of a sudden. And then he's the Boomers coach. Now, no discredit to him, but if he's still the best we've got after all these years, sort of, I start to worry about our coaching
development. That was a sigh there. You drew breath in a real sigh.
You know, it's just the same old. And generations of players come and go, and we've still got the same coaches.
I think to me, the hire did feel like a wee bit of a regression. I felt like, oh, it didn't, as Ned Zelich would say, it didn't sort of burst with individual brilliance or imagination or fantasy. Like, it was a very like, oh, okay, the program's in a bit of trouble, an unexpected withdrawal. Let's get Brian Gorgeous. You know, guy's had the job and big name. But I like people who are hungry for the gig. I like first timers. They give best effort.
I had a look.
It felt like a fallback appointment rather than a like, all right, let's get on the front foot and see who do we really want? Who's really up and coming? Yeah, I didn't get that. I will say, however, do you think I think it's likely that he'll coach for this tournament and then they'll hire a more long-term replacement.
But I think he was hired for this and the next World Champs. I think that was the deal. So he's got the two tournaments, the Olympics and the World Champs.
See, that's an error in my mind. If he was just taking on the Olympics because it's been such a mess of a year and Brett Brown essentially resigning, that would make sense. But for him to go any longer than that, I don't think that's right.
Yeah. I'm almost more curious about what his assistants, who his assistants will be. You know, what sort of people is he going to put on around him? Are they going to be Gorgian acolytes? Where does Trevor Gleeson stand in all this? Trevor Gleeson interviewed for the job, was an assistant coach. Is he going to get a look in as an assistant now? Would he want it? Does Brian Gorgian want him? I think those are some of the really interesting, subplots coming out of all of this.
Did you read the article where Gleeson in the West, where Gleeson was kind of, I didn't actually read this, but did he have a real, it felt like a real sigh, he had a bit of a, it was quite negative. Did you read it? Did you get that tone?
I didn't see the article, no, so I can't really comment, but I can only imagine. I feel sorry for him because.
Same.
I think, what more can the guy do? I'm no Gleeson fan, all right? I put it out there. I was disappointed when the Wildcats hired him. I still don't love him. Yeah, I think he's annoying. He's a whinger. But, he's got results on the board. And I guess what more can you possibly ask for? He plays a different style to what we see most often. So he's got some sort of level of coaching.
But
now,
and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Andrew, but a style I think would really work well with the Boomers, where your main scoring comes from 6'1" wispy guards in Patrick Mills and what will soon be Bryce Cotton, fingers crossed. I think, and people would say, an answer to you, Andrew, would say, oh, but Gleeson's had the superior talent in the NBL, coaching the Wildcats, they're expected to win. But isn't that exactly what the Boomers campaign is? Like, the best talent in the country and you're expected to win? It's the exact same script, and he's played that role for a long time now. So I really saw him as a huge candidate. I was Beveridge for a while, and now I thought, no, when there was uncertainty about the team and Cotton coming in, I thought Gleeson would have been a really good hire. But
I wonder how much was the decision of the selection panel and how much of was it talking to the potential players that would be in this team?
Yeah, I saw something online where it's like, oh, Gorgian made a call to Simmons about playing in the Olympics, and I heard someone on Twitter kind of reply, I would expect that. I would expect someone to. And I immediately thought, like, oh, that's good. Gorgian's. And when I saw that comment, I was like, well, of course he effing should. That's the first thing you do if you got a job. You'd approach Ben Simmons.
Yep.
But, I mean, look at Gorgian. And he didn't have the best Boomers teams in the world, but 9th and 7th at the Olympics. Yep. It's the one blemish on his resume. His NBL record is fantastic. You know, did he jump at this? You know,
Yeah, and how much, I know Joe, I think I saw Joe Ingles was pretty bullish on Brian Gorgian. And is that important? I mean, Joe Ingles, is he going to even play? I assume he'll play.
But yeah, you're right.
We're getting on, it's,
exactly. And Bogut was, I'm sure, the same way. How much of their influence was involved? But, I've never been in a job where I've thought, I hope that the bosses hire their friend. That's the best thing. What I mean, that's not the best. It's not the worst, but it's not the best employment criteria either. So, no, I agree with that.
Look, yeah. I think in many ways, in my mind, Brian Goorjian is a lot like a new import player into the league. Like, I remember what he could do when he was younger and he was a good coach, but I want to see some evidence. And until this season kicks off and we see what has he been able to do with this Hawks team, maybe he'll have them firing on all cylinders. He'll have changed his methodologies. He'll have kept the defensive intensity and improved the offensive coaching. Maybe all those things are true, but gosh, it's nerve-wracking times for the Boomers.
Don't tell me, show me. Yeah, I agree. I think Gorgia made a nice little quote in the paper as well, and he said, you know, it's like working for the Boomers is like military service. You've called upon, you serve. And the way I look at it, this Boomers hire is, has he enlisted or been conscripted? And I kind of lean towards him being conscripted. And you want someone who's enlisted. You know, I want to be the best, the brightest, or whatever the Marines logo is. And I don't, not that Goorjian isn't that, but I know there's candidates who most certainly would have been. I mean, Gleeson would have been chuffed. And Joey Ride or a Beveridge, they would have been very, very happy with it. But anyway, that didn't happen. Anything else on that one?
No, just also interesting to watch the Boomers' culture over the next four years. They've made a big deal about their culture over the last little while. The Lamana style and the enabling of the players and all that kind of stuff. Just wonder, Goorjian, is he still got that tough, you know, my way or the highway kind of approach? And how will that
does that work with the Simmons? Does that work with the younger guys, Exum, so forth?
Yeah, just curious. Watch this space.
Let's jump on. Let's talk about the preseason games. Be honest, how much of these did you watch?
I watched the highlight packages.
Okay. Yeah, I watched probably, I'm just being honest, I'm not going to lie to people and say I watched the whole games when I didn't. I mean, I couldn't. I don't hate myself, but you'd have to watch those. I probably watched about 20 minutes of both.
Yeah.
You know, just dotted here and there and see what happened. Giddy was quite good in both games. Struggled shooting in the second game. The big question I had watching him there was, because he wasn't going up against the best of NBL talent. I don't know who his direct opponent or defender was a lot of the time, but it wasn't someone who'd be getting major minutes next season. Yep. Will he, and my question is, he looked really poised and he had nice passing and vision and he was looking over people and that won't change. But when we get to the season, when there's a bigger body, will the increased strength cause him to speed up? That's my number one question I have about him. And obviously it didn't get answered in this preseason game, but we'll see. What did you do from the highlights? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a really good question. What I noted to me, obviously DJ in Adelaide, looks like he might be headed for a career year.
He looked unreal.
He just was dominant. Didn't miss a beat. Pretty impressive stuff. I mean, obviously I was watching the highlights, so I don't know how many bricks he threw up at the same time.
I sort of poked in and out and looked at the box score because I didn't want to give these games too much of my attention. I felt that would have been a mistake.
Yeah.
But he played really well. But he just looked like, okay, you saw Sobey miss a dunk in game one. You're like, all right, he's going to get minutes. Who else? Yep. Drimmick, you're like, yeah, okay, he's quite good. DJ, of course, I was just looking at like who are your absolute hammers. And that's where, when we talk about Adelaide bigs, I didn't see it from Isaac Humphries. I just thought, is he capable? He is a big dog signing for them. He's the reason, or one of the reasons they've only gone with one import. Is he a guy who it's like, give him the ball, watch him operate? I didn't see it.
I didn't get that.
It's only a preseason game, but I didn't see it.
Yeah. I mean, both of the teams, it just looked like an exceedingly unathletic white guy game. There was not a lot of above the rim action.
I couldn't have put it better myself. Keanu Pinder, the one exception there, but if he's an upgrade on Obi Shea, I didn't see it in these games, but time will tell.
Yeah.
He again, good energy, good athleticism, but pretty raw from the outside. And
yeah.
Yeah, things like that.
Yeah, I think he looks like a carbon copy of Obi Shea at this point.
Almost identical. Yeah, just same kind of game with the athleticism and stuff. Yep. But that normally plays quite well in the NBL. I didn't think Obi Shea did himself any discredit last year. You know, he was what he was.
He was good. He was fine. I'm surprised that he's left the game. You know, the real disappointment, I thought.
He's training with the Kings. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
Brisbane. What did you see? I mean, you just watched the highlights. You didn't see the lowlights.
I mean, jeez.
Oh, boy.
There wasn't a lot to see. The highlights were pretty limp for Brisbane. So undermanned. Yeah, okay, so they didn't have Magne.
And the travelling team. Yeah, good one.
Yep.
I mean, there's a thousand excuses.
And,
it's preseason.
You know, preseason. What do you? Who cares, right? You're just trying to try some stuff out. But it's just many years of Brisbane being meandering, like boring, difficult to maintain enthusiasm. They need to do better.
I mean, I looked at, I'll just say this, Harry Froling.
Yep.
4 of 9, 1 of 7 in the two games for a combined 15 points, 31% over the two games. Again, preseason, but we're not going to keep highlighting that. With Magne gone, and he is gone, and was gone from when Boddy Nodge first put out his article in what, June or July. They need something from him, and I just didn't see it. And in a preseason game where, and it, again, yes, for a guy like Daniel Johnson, he can take it off, or Sobey, it doesn't mean anything to him. But to a guy like Harry Froling, I was like, all right, I'm expecting Harry Froling to be in the 20s, 30s,
yep,
and be the guy in this game who you can go, all right, whew,
yep,
we at least know we've got something from him. I didn't see it.
No.
And if he got upset with me saying that, I'd be like, well, do you want to sit down and watch those games again? He didn't do it, and I'm starting to worry about him.
He doesn't look like he's in any better shape. I was wondering if he'd come in sort of, you know, with a bit of a cut body, you know, get in the gym, get some muscle definition. Didn't see any of that. Maybe it was a low resolution camera. But no, it just, yeah, you're right. He just didn't seem like he wanted to really be there and dominate. And I think it's an attitude thing, isn't it? And you can't, it's hard to train.
I'm high on his game. I thought he was coming off a good NBL 19 with Adelaide, where he was coming off the bench in minor minutes, but really showing a lot of stuff from inside, outside, a little bit of passing. I thought it was great. And then I think he's struggling with, and this is again a bit of a guess, but his management terribly screwed up his draft eligibility year.
Yep.
And as a result, was just ran onto a moving treadmill when he went to the NBA draft, sort of did all these tryouts and things. And they, how you make that mistake, I don't know. Because he was like, oh, I'm looking forward to the NBA draft this year. And they were like, no, you're eligible this year. And he had to get in a plane immediately. That's a huge error. And yeah. I just don't think, I think he's still stung from that hurt because he dropped off last year and you know, hopefully he can turn around this year. But yeah, these preseason games, something to go for, not so much.
I think some of these guys as well, like, I think sometimes you need a bit of a reality check in that not everybody, I'm afraid, is going to make the NBA.
No.
Okay? But if you can build a 10, 12-year career in the NBL, that's a bloody good achievement.
And come out with a decent reputation.
Yeah, and you should, you should be proud of yourself. If you can do that, not many people can do that, you know, so.
Oh, it'd be a great lifestyle too. Let's not kid around. And we're NBL fans, but you play once, twice a week.
Yep.
Crisscross the country a fraction. Most of the time you're still in your own bed. Yep. It is a great life. You're not traveling to, I don't know if you've ever been to Russia, but I have. And if you're traveling anywhere within Russia, you're not having fun. The transit, you're on a plane, you're, you know, taking Qantas, you arrive in Perth, you arrive in Adelaide, oh, let's see the town. You know, it's safety, secure, like it's a joy in summer as well. You're traveling around the country. You go up to far north Queensland every so often.
You got a girl in every city.
It's a beautiful life. So there shouldn't be any major complaints. Yeah, I mean, Will Magne gone. He makes such a difference for them. And
yeah,
I just think going back to Harry Froling as it pertains to Magne, I just don't see where, if Froling and his management were happy to sign that contract behind Magne, knowing he was going to be there, and Hodgson, it's just not a deal he would have put on paper. You know what I mean? Like that, and he has to be that guy for them. He's going to be a starter for them, or at least would have been intended to be at the start of the year. But yeah, those preseason games. Wow. Let's jump on, unless you've got anything else to add.
No, jump on.
New jerseys, let's do that.
Yeah.
Your thoughts to the quote-unquote new jerseys?
My very first point here on my little screen, I've written disappointing, trending towards terrible.
Wow. Okay.
I've gone out hard.
You're not a if it's not broken, don't fix it guy.
Well, it was broken last year and they didn't fix it. That's the problem. I'm not a fan. I'd like the New Zealand one. I will pay credit for that one.
Nice colorway. It's a colorway change. It's not a uniform change. It's a colorway change. But
I like it. But no, just
no discernible change after that.
And it's the template style. You know, every team is basically the same. Just switch out some colors and you know, just like meh. All the white uniforms for the aways again, except for two teams, I think. Brisbane were yellow.
We've got colours.
Brisbane yellow, New Zealand blue away teams. And shouldn't you? I'm just firing off now. Shouldn't the away uniforms have the name of the city, not the team?
Yes.
Name?
Yeah, that would make greater sense.
There was no consistency. Some had them, some didn't. It's like, well, yeah. I don't know. Kings, they're still not really showing us what logo they're going to use.
That was a bit sneaky, like, wasn't it?
There's no crown, there's no bridge. It's just.
Do you think that's the final? That's the final jersey.
Yeah,
they're not going to change. They're not going to hang a little crown off the S of Kings, are they? Or something? No, that's it. They're gone.
What
with that.
They're just going like bugger it. We're just Kings. We got no logo. But I mean, Wildcats. I know they don't have their logo. I don't think.
Yeah, good point. No, they don't have they might have a little Subway logo style on the back. I'm not too sure about that. But yeah, they don't. I mean, for me with these, what. They're not original, but they've never have been. So, and I've come accustomed to that. But you should be able to, if someone turned on their television and the sound wasn't on, which you should still be able to communicate your product without the sound, right? You shouldn't. Yeah. If you have to tell someone what you've got, people don't want to listen. You should be able to turn on the television and immediately go, "I'm watching an Australian basketball product." You should immediately know that. I don't think they really communicate that. You could take these and make them into an AFL jersey. You could take these into any country in the world and change them. They didn't immediately shout basketball. They didn't immediately shout Australia either. I thought that was failing. Like, there's not a huge Aboriginal element in any of them, Indigenous element in any of them.
No.
So that I don't know how else you communicate Australia. None of the logos really incorporate cityscapes or skylines. So you didn't communicate that. And then basketball, like, let's be honest, these could be volleyball, netball. Like, the Kings uniform is purple with the Kings written on it, and Brisbane's as well. Like, does it communicate basketball to someone? Are they daring? Are they original? Are they particularly interesting to look at? And I don't know what they are.
The Bullets as well. What are they doing with that font? I mean, really, it's horrendous. I know they had that last year as well, and it's got nothing. There's no alignment between the font of the jersey and the logo.
Right. It's
totally separate things. It's like, I don't get it. Nothing makes sense to me anymore. It's just.
And it's such a missed opportunity. Like, jerseys are a big. I mean, I don't know what apparel sales are in this country, but I see a lot of NBA apparel.
Yep.
And if you're the NBL product, it's like if you're going into the burger market, you know, if you're like, all right, we're going into burgers as a business. It's a huge, as much as it's very competitive, it's a huge market. A lot of burgers are sold. If you can get 10% of that market, well, you're doing okay. Do these uniforms make 10% of an NBA market, or people looking to buy sports apparel go, oh no, I'm going to get my local NBL team's jersey, because maybe not because I engage with the league, but because I like the uniform.
Yep.
Does it get you that amount? My answer would be no. I don't think many people would counter me on that either.
Yeah, no, it's they're just meh. And look, if you've bought one in the past, the good news is you don't need to buy one this season.
A good point as well. You don't get it's 100 times more expensive to get a new customer than it is to keep an original one, and you don't even keep that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, a little bit of a missed opportunity, a little bit. I mean, they're serviceable. They are what they are. But again, one thing I wanted to ask you though is, so Champion took over the uniforms.
Yep.
These look to be the first ever ones replicated or re-replicated.
Yeah.
What is this deal with Champion? A Champion designing them wholly and solely? A Champion producing them or making them? It's this weird thing. First ever is run by Larry Kesselman's son, I think, Justin.
Yep.
So what deal has been struck there? Because I would have thought if Champion took over, they were going to do a rehaul, because they couldn't use the PI or PI? IP? of first ever. But that doesn't seem to have happened. So I don't know what's going on there. What do you think?
Maybe it's just different material. Like, maybe they feel really nice. Adelaide's away uniform is a bit different.
Yeah, that black and white.
There's a couple of variations there, but on the whole,
identical would not be an unfair word.
No, if you asked man on the street, like,
spot the difference.
Yeah, there's not going to be a lot of differences to spot. It'd be a very short game.
The spot, yeah. The difference of the Wildcat jersey. It's changed from red to a mysterious crimson. Is that the difference? It's identical. You wanted to talk about the NBL website. What did you
have to say? Speaking of design and stuff like that, the NBL website annoyed me once again the other day when I was trying to read an article, and they have this sort of weird embedded...
Oh, am I sorry to interrupt? On your laptop or computer or on your phone?
It was a phone that time. Okay. I was trying to read an article, and so you can't tap through the headline because that often doesn't actually link anywhere. You've got to scroll down, at least in my world, you've got to scroll down to the latest news section and click that bit, and that seems to work. Maybe others have
that. I've never had that, but
okay. Yeah, come on. I am a bit of a nerd as well, and I tend to enable ad blockers and that sort of stuff. So maybe it's something to do with me. But okay. anyway, and then I was trying to read the article, and it just loaded the first screen and then just crashed out. You couldn't scroll through, and it's just like, but it's got one of those weird sort of embedded scrollers where it shows you the progress of your article across the top of the window. Yeah. It's just like, come on, NBL, can you just give us a normal website? Like, stop trying to be smart and clever. Just build a normal website that works, that, you know, week by week gives you the news in a chronological view, gives us the latest scores. Just, you're trying to be too smart, and your website sucks, and do something about it.
I think I can only really comment on I like the app, especially in season where it's just like, here are the games. Here are the four or five games this week. If they've been played, a score comes up. I find the app quite good in that respect.
Do you like the Hungry Jacks ad that pops up every time you try and do anything?
No, I don't like that. That's a good point. Brought to you by Early Mobile. I'm just firing it up now, and I actually do kind of like the way this feels. It's got a nice north to south feel to it. Yep. I can't complain about that. The website though does feel a little bit undernourished for design, a little bit undernourished for content on there on occasion as well. You know, I mean, not stuff very seldom goes up on there, but I haven't had the same problems with it as you do. But I'm not as technically minded as you are, so I would lean on you on this one.
I had problems with the app as well, in that for whatever reason, I could not ever log on to NBL. What's the paid thing? NBL TV.
NBL. No, I will admit logging onto that is difficult. And let me tell you, what's even harder than that is cancelling your subscription. Oh. Which I don't just know this. It's like once you go into NBL TV, you may never come out. You're in for life. Good luck.
I think that's what it is. I think I ended up somehow with two NBL TV accounts, and I have no idea which one had the money attached to it for a long time.
Good luck. You'll never know.
No, you're not eligible.
I'll make it easy on you now. Just dust your hands off it. Throw your hands back. You're never getting your money, mate. Just take it. That's just $5 every month. It's gone.
It's my NBL tax. It's like a Patreon for the NBL.
Just take it. Whatever. Anything else on this?
No, but just come on. I guess it's not going to change, is it? They're not going to spend money on a website this year. They haven't spent money on new uniforms. Why are they going to change the website? But wow,
yeah, it wouldn't be the year. But you know, a lot of people are spending. You know, like you look at NBA teams, Philadelphia 76ers fire their head coach. They bring in Doc Rivers. They pay Daryl Morey a fortune. You know, it's a bear economy. Some people spend in a bear economy. The NBL doesn't seem to be one that's going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Quickly, Victor Oladipo buys into the Breakers. I will just point out about this. He joins the ownership group, and financial terms of the deal were not discussed. He could have a 50% stake. He could have invested 1%. I would lean towards less is more. Yeah. But kind of neat. You know, these NBA players kind of do this. What was your reaction? What do you think?
Oh, I think it's only good, right? It provides a marketing opportunity if nothing else. And who knows, maybe as time goes on, he will become more involved. You've got to start somewhere. And I like the idea of, I'd sooner an NBA player buy an NBA team or an NBL team than invest in like a bar or a nightclub.
Oh yeah. Never going to
recording studio, you know, that kind of thing.
That's been done to death.
Bad idea. At least put your money in the NBL where we can waste it and provide no return on investment and get some enjoyment from it.
And you're still within the sport. Yeah, I agree with that. Again, Matt Walsh, young, robust owners. They just seem to kind of do things that are fun or exciting. Go figure. I mean, that's a bit fatuous to say, but I like the way he does things. He gets people involved and gets people involved from places you wouldn't think. You know, the Adelaide 36ers
got that evaluation for 7.2 and an ownership group of 10 people. I think one of them was a country western singer based out of Korea or something crazy. So, but Matt Walsh, it's like, oh, we've got Sean Marion and we've got Victor Oladipo. Actually building a decent fantasy team if you're playing one of the, you know, card collecting type things. Moving on from that, this is something I want to quickly mention. It's not NBL. The game between the Adelaide Lightning and the Southside Flyers of the WNBL. Their game was meant to be played, I think, at 4 o'clock this afternoon, or certainly sometime this afternoon, postponed due to COVID. I mean, as much as we've had all these great signings from Cam Oliver and Victor Oladipo and New Jersey's and Brian Gorgian and Weaver and da-da-da, this thing is still real fragile. I was actually chatting to Nick Tan over a couple of days, and he's sort of, in my mind, I hope he doesn't mind me saying it, but he was saying, like, how fragile is this season? Look at what's going on. Like, are we, what's going to, even in a hub, you're not safe. I heard in an interview today that Larry Kessler was like, yeah, the league's looking like it's going to start early in the new year or December, of one of the two.
Yep.
It was the new year. Just looking at this, how fragile this is. And I don't think the NBL can put its money in on something so fragile.
I've got a, it is nerve wracking, and I'm not confident, but I'm just saying ignorance is bliss, and I'm kind of just assuming that everything will be fine. Because
the Brisbane Bullets are in a 2-week isolation quarantine as we speak from a preseason game.
Traveling interstate, right? Yes, it's crazy. So I don't know how they're going to actually make it. WA opened up and then closed down again for South Australia.
Almost in the same day.
Yeah. It's really not looking good. I don't know. Can the teams split their rosters into sort of two? They can have a team A and a team B, and then they isolate from one another. So if, you know, Sydney Kings team A goes down, don't worry, we'll roll in the team B. I just think
unless you're doing, whoever's doing the schedule has got to get really, really creative and minimize travel, which I think the NBL should have been doing a long time ago. Often I've looked at the schedule and thought, what? Like, Perth are playing Cairns this week and then home against Adelaide and then they're back on the road against Cairns. Like, what?
Yeah.
Why don't they just play the two games in Cairns back to back and stay in Cairns?
Cutting you off.
No, you go.
You just need to make almost like a series of mini tournaments.
Precisely.
And just have like, yeah, you got your little Perth tournament goes on, then Adelaide tournament, and you have like a massive games, just smash them through a tournament. You know, and then move on. The road show moves on.
Imagine, and I think you'd be able to package it better. Like if you said, let's say Adelaide are traveling to Perth for three games and then Perth are going to Adelaide later in the year. But imagine if you said, three-ticket deal or three-game deal with Adelaide. They're coming to town for three games. One game on the Friday, the next game on the Monday, and then a Sunday night or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you just sort of sell this mini series. Who's going to win the miniature series within the season? I just think that baseball, the MLB, Major League Baseball, does the same thing. And it seems to have worked pretty well for 200 years that league's existed. So I don't know.
Actually, that's how they used to do it. I don't know if they still do. When baseball had its short period of popularity here, they did the same thing. You'd have a series of games against the same teams.
Speaking of which, Manny Ramirez has signed with the Sydney Blue Sox. They begin their preseason in December, just quietly. I think we're done with that thing. But the NBL's reconciliation plan, I wanted to go over the nuts and bolts of this one. Because I quite like the look of it. You know, sometimes these things in print can be quite wishy-washy where it's like, we're committed to, it's like if you've seen White Men Can't Jump, you know, when they go to the International 2-on-2 tournament for Brotherhood. and it's like, we're here sponsoring Brotherhood amongst us all. And the tournament does the complete opposite thing. Sometimes these things can be like that. This actually, I looked at it and thought, this is really good. So to give you the nuts and bolts of it, the NBL will refund 50% of the minimum salary for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders who are DPs. I think that's pretty good. I think that's pretty good. And then also there's a few things going on from there. But if you're looking at your DP slot, why wouldn't you take advantage of that? I mean, I don't know many DPs who have matured into a lot in the last couple of years. As a cost-cutting benefit, as a goodwill, as also on its merits, I think it's really
good. Look, you need, you know, if you want to try and create pathways, it's a good way of doing it. And everybody wins. You know, the player gets an opportunity that might not otherwise have been granted him. And you just never know, do you? It's everybody has to get their start somehow, some way, and everybody has a different sort of advantage. Some guys go to prestigious colleges and, you know, expensive schools, and that provides a nice pathway into a professional league. For somebody else, it's the fact that their wage is being subsidized. Who cares what the advantage is? But yeah, that's it. Take it.
And I look at Nate Jawai, and I just think he's had a nice career and he's a great player, but how he was so undiscovered for so long and then all of a sudden burst on the scene of the NBL. And once you do that, that was a good thing, and he got to the NBA and got drafted, I believe. But he should have been, you know, he should have been something from 16, 17 pushed through and held up, and he just sort of emerged out of nowhere. And you know, you can't have that happen again. It shouldn't happen in the first place, but you can't have it happen again. I think this is a step towards that. And then also the other thing with this deal is I think that Aboriginal Torres Strait Islanders contracts don't count towards the salary cap. I think that's only as they're a DP. I don't think it goes into rostered players, but still, like if you're there is a mechanism for teams to incentivize and get a little bit more than incentivizing, get creative.
Yeah.
You know? So I was pretty pleased with that.
I think that's really good. And it's bigger than a singles. This is bigger than a season. You know, Indigenous people, they need role models. You know, they need people who can look up to and say, look, he made it, why can't I? And if you can create more of those role model opportunities, then good-o, do it.
Yeah. And I think the next step further on from this would be create an Aboriginal Indigenous pathway that's media-driven and sports administration-driven, where it's like, you know, if you take on this, incentivize it this somehow, and, you know, imagine if they put out a call, anyone looking to do writing for the website, anyone's looking to do, you know, you've got all these avenues. It's not just players as well. It's far from players. You know, players really represent 0.001% of the population, whereas sports admin, coaching, media stuff, digital marketing, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
The more you see that come through, the better. So fingers crossed.
Very good point.
This is certainly a really good step in the right direction. I want to talk to you about this, Andrew. It's not NBL related. The NBA starts in December. Now, I know you're an NBL first, and I might even be more accurate going NBL exclusively, but it does start in December. Do you have an interest in this?
Oh, look, a passing interest. I used to be more into it than I am nowadays.
And then when was that? How long ago?
Oh, probably 8 or 9 years ago now. Time flies, right? When I didn't have kids and things to deal with, there was more time in the day. I used to enjoy it more. But nowadays, I'll still look at the scores, but I also find that the style of play in the NBA not that interesting. Okay. I just don't get too enthusiastic about lots of guys running down, jacking up threes, not much effort on offensive rebounding. And just playing percentages like that, it doesn't excite me.
One thing I'll say is, because I'm not bullish about there being an NBL season. I'm not convinced there's going to be a season at all. So then the thought was, do I extend this podcast into sort of an NBA-NBL pocket podcast thing?
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone's really struck on the answer to the question, what are the genuine wants and needs of Australian NBA fans in Australia of the NBA? What do they want out of the NBA and its coverage? I don't think anyone's ever struck on it. The simple answer is, they just want to follow Ingles, Mills, you know, the Australian players. I don't think that's the case. I don't have a huge interest in those guys playing in the NBA. I want to see them do well, but I don't really, I don't feel a personal connection to them. I've never met them. I don't know them. And if we met, we probably wouldn't like each other. I don't know.
I remember I tweeted Joe Ingles one time and I clearly insulted him, and he came back to me with something that wasn't very complimentary. And I thought, we clearly don't like each other.
I don't get along with most people. Why would these guys be any different? So I don't think that's the answer. So then what is it? And I've been racking my brain, and it's a question I put to you, where someone who's a basketball fan, you should be engaged with the NBA in some way. And maybe the limit of it is just checking the highlights and the scores, but could it be something more? Could something change for you to get you more involved?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough question. Really tough.
I more pose the question just to pose it than get an answer.
Interesting to hear. This is where we need listener feedback. If you've got thoughts on this, please get back to Joe and let him know.
Yeah, do. Twitter, Facebook. There's a hotline. Hotline, you're the only one who cares about this hotline. I've got one text message of worth on that darn hotline. The rest, it's kind of gone unseen. But yeah.
Look, I want to see what I do feel like is that our media in the NBA or the NBA coverage we get over here is still dominated by the classically famous teams. You still hear about, Lakers, Boston,
Knicks,
Bulls. Okay, they're like your Premier League teams, if you want to call them that. But what's going on in well, Utah's probably a bad example because
we're Charlotte. Minnesota.
Brooklyn. Like Brooklyn never gets talked about, even though it's theoretically a good team. What's happening in some of those mid-tier teams? And can you perhaps get more insight and access into a team that isn't the superstar glamour teams? I don't know.
I would also contend that the coverage is very juvenile. It's very, and not that there's a problem with that, but there's no, as you said before, like when you had more hours in the day, you were interested.
Yeah.
Then you lost interest when you didn't. So how do you package it in a way that's still applicable to a mature crowd? And I feel like that's where it kind of falls flat. And I said this a little while ago, like NBA, I think the media as it is now just sort of takes from the American media and puts it through. But the American thing puts it up as a evening time, big headline type performance. Whereas in Australia, it's played over breakfast if you're watching it live, which is if you're not watching these games live, whenever you're watching a delayed game, even if it's NBL or anything, like if you know the outcome, forget it.
Not my fun, no.
So it should be handled in a way that's breakfast radio. I think anyway, it should be more of a, okay, that's what happened at breakfast. And then it's, we've got the NBL this evening. And I think like that's the space it should sit in. What physical form that takes, I haven't quite stumbled upon, but that's how I do it. But I just thought I'd get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, quickly. I don't think I've answered your question very well.
No, it's more just to put the question out there.
It's a good one. I'd be interested in other people's answers who are more into it than I. I'm also curious to know, speaking of NBL and NBA TV and all that, we have Stan, who's launching their sports service. So they're taking on KO and so on in terms of the subscription-based sports.
Okay. Now I got to tell you about a crazy idea I had. A sports TV show set in Australia. I was watching a documentary the other day called The Bastards of Baseball or something like that, about Bing Russell, Kurt Russell's father bought a baseball team. They were renegade and they just kind of put a team up and everyone thought they'd fail and they did really well.
Right.
What I thought you could do is create a tournament that is made for TV, not for sports, but actually made for drama TV, where you show the game live, yes, but before that you do all these player profiles and all the players have come from non-professional backgrounds. You cannot be a professional and play. So that's NBL 1 players out, NBL players out. You have to be, it's the man off the street league. And, you have to be good. You have to be good because you've got to pay money to enter in and there'll be a prize money. And then you're basically just telling all these guys stories week after week and then the game plays.
So it's like Ninja Warrior or something.
Ninja Warrior, but basketball.
Talk about their life, what they do.
Mm-hmm. And you'd have some guys who are, I was a great player. I played NBL and then I got a job as an accountant. I went away, but now I'm back. Then you got the guy who's just hound-dogging it on the street. Delusions of grandeur, you got all these little stories, but you're mainly focusing on that. You're mainly focusing on the story of these guys. And then there's just these ramshackle tournaments, 5-on-5s of guys that have come together and it's sort of this Friday night lights.
Right. Yeah, right down. That's you're a smart man.
And you don't have to pay your talent, so that's a cost-cutting thing. You give out a mega prize money. You make everyone put up money to enter, so you're making money as you're taking money. It's
genius. You should be a TV executive.
Stop it. You hang up first. I think it'd be fun. But go on about Stan. What were you saying?
Well, yeah, just that they've signed on the rugby to their on the deal.
Mm.
It just is really interesting. It's another opportunity for the NBL to maybe think about how they can get eyeballs. Mm.
Do you have Stan?
No. It's about the only one I don't have.
I've got it. It's not bad. They've got Sacha Baron Cohen and a few things. It's definitely a 18 to 30 male streaming service. They are going for men of a certain age. Yep. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they've now launched into sports. But that's cool. Another avenue. Andrew, we've hit an hour. Last thing to talk about. Sad news. Norman Taylor. You take it.
Yeah, look, Stormin Norman Taylor. When I was a kid, he was playing for the Hawks, running around the snake pit. Just an absolute awesome player to watch. Undersized. Mm. Had a big ass. Once he got on the block, it was money. It was like, it was bank shots all day. He was almost like a prototype Tim Duncan without quite the same height. You could just get buckets. And there was nothing about him that you would say like, wow, he's super dominant or anything like that. But he would just accumulate and just have his way down low. You know, he was just right. Strong, strong dude. Really, really fun player to watch back in those long ago times. So, yeah, thanks.
Well, his career would span what years, do you think? He played 67 games for the Hawks between 89 and 91. Was that all?
It feels like he was around for much more than that. That's interesting. That's really only two seasons. Well, 67 games, 2.5 seasons. Jeez. Yeah. But, yeah, he was – when was it? Oh, it'd have to be the early 90s, I guess.
He was, yeah, it says here 89 to 91.
There we go. Yeah, just
55 in a game or something like that, yeah.
Yep. All, I reckon they all went off the backboard. He was playing. The benefit he had, though, is he could go off the backboard of the snake pit and you didn't have the fans pinging the supporting wires trying to put the ball off. That's what opposition had put up with.
I remember that. Yeah, no, he'd play a little bit before my time, but, you know, I heard a lot about him. But, yeah, sad heart attack at 55.
Yeah.
He had the physique of someone who that, you know, he was big in the body and big in the chest. And but, yeah, just sad.
Yep.
But
yep.
Good player, you know.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Exactly.
I think that brings us a bit of a solemn end, but, you know, that is the end. Any final words, Andrew?
It's been fun to actually have some content. Thank you, yeah. NBL. This is a much
some real news. Yes.
Just sort of making up Karate Kid storylines and things like that. If you do.
You know,
but if there's true. Demand for that, we will do more. We
will. Absolutely, we'll do more of that sort of stuff. I'm just trying to think what's next. Hang on, has anything been rebooted? You know, I watched Point Break recently. They remade that a couple of years ago, but I don't think that's terribly relevant to what we're doing here. But watch this space, Point Break. If you're a fan, we could do something there.
Yeah.
That's it. Andrew, always a pleasure. Take it easy.
Yeah.